This podcast is a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, go over to newmediarevolution.org to listen to the others. I'm serious about that. Now that you've downloaded this, I have your IP address. I can find where you live, I can come there, and I can punch you in the crotch. A lot. Crotch punching is serious business, folks. Believe me, you don't want it to happen to you. Go to newmediarevolution.org and listen to the rest of the Progressive Podcast Network. Just want to let you folks know before you listen to this that I put this together with a severe head cold and with very little, well, actually no planning for this episode due to a high workload, so I guess I figured if I was going to sling crap, I might as well sling a lot of it, because this episode is about double the length of an average other one. It's pretty much just me rambling, reading the newspaper, or whatever, but I don't know, I just feel guilty about not putting anything up for y'all, so here it is. And I'll try to make up for it by, maybe I'll give you a second episode this week. Oh wait, no, it's not even going to be this week by then. Okay, well, hopefully I can get this uploaded on time by my new schedule. Enjoy for what it's worth. Hey buddies, what's up? Godless Kinzer here, podcasting to you from LSA Anaconda near beautiful sunny Balad, Iraq. It's been another week, and you know what that means? It's time once again to hunker in the bunker for another episode of Watch It Burn. Watch It Burn is dedicated to the memory of Sergeant Brian Brewster and all of our comrades who have fallen, from the militia of Captain John Parker to the soldiers of today. Hey everybody. It's going to be kind of an odd show this week, I guess. Don't really have anything planned because I've been jumping through my ass to get ready for inspection here. The NCO of my shop, he went on leave this morning. I had turned to go, which is cool. He and his wife and my wife get along pretty well. I've been working with him since I first got to Fort Campbell in 2001. And we've been in the same shop together since then, so we know each other pretty well, get along pretty well. But before he was married, we used to hang out off and on. I'd have him over to the house for barbecues and stuff like that. He's a decent guy. But anyway, don't really have anything prepared because, like I said, the inspection and all, and then my usual recording night, Sunday, when he's off and the guy in the shop next door that shares a window through the wall with us, he's off too, so I can do my recording in here without having crosstalk and other voices and stuff. So Sunday night, though, I had tower guard where I was out on the perimeter, and as you can hear in the background, there's a C-130 taxiing out, ready to take off, or whatever the hell they're going to do. Maybe they're just turning around to go down a different taxiway. Anyways, there's a lot of background noise right now. Hopefully that'll die off a little bit pretty soon here. Oh, yes, it is dying off. All right. What's up, man? Still looking for that knife?
Jason,
he ain't got it. He showed me his.
Dude, I swear to God,
that
somebody's
just sitting
right there.
Well,
did you drop it in the toughest wipes box here? Right here.
Huh.
So that's what I understand, though. Well, I think somebody had to have picked it up.
Didn't fall down, maybe, well. Hold in that box, maybe? Yeah, thank you. You're one of the people who's considerate enough not to sit it down in the dirt. I didn't even bother bringing my Benchmade with me this time. It was such a hassle getting through customs going back home last time. So the hell with it, I'm just going to leave it there at the house.
I wore all my shit here on the way here.
Yeah.
Going out, going back home
to
leave, I
think. Yeah. Oh, man. It's going to be a long night. Still got to get some chains to chain up my compressor to that drain grill out there. A little bit of a head cold starting too. Damn it. I've got to see if I can't get into the movement squad con and get a chain out of there. And try to find a lock somewhere. And probably argue with the day shift NCOs about whether to give them a key to that lock or not. So I know what'll happen. I'll give a key to them, and then... I'll give the key to them, and then somebody will end up... The L3 guys will end up trying to borrow that compressor. Instead of leaving it there, that's why we want to chain it up so it doesn't go anywhere else. So we have a compressor, you know, in the work area at all times. But like anything else, if it's left unsecured, it's going to walk away.
Yep.
Take it easy, man. Alrighty. Well, that was Barnett. I figure I'll just go ahead and leave this on here so you can hear the regular interaction of two soldiers when one of them is looking for a missing knife he had lost. But as I had said, I had tower guard on Sunday, which is no big deal. It was a real boring night, which is nice. The wife will appreciate that it was boring. Nothing, well, it wasn't quite boring, but it wasn't exciting, I should say. It was alternately interesting and uninteresting. That's probably the best way to put it. One of the interesting moments, one of which was a local laborer, probably not even hired by us, but he was outside of the wire underneath of my tower, just outside of the distance we usually keep them, and he wanted to speak to an interpreter, so it was a comedy of errors trying to find who was responsible for getting an interpreter to come out there, whether it was our immediate supervisor, the commander of the relief, or whether it was the shift NCOIC, or whether it was the Anaconda main element. And so everything pretty much official wise, anything like big like that, supposedly we're supposed to go through Anaconda Maine. So I called them up, of course, and told them that, you know, we had a local national here that was wanting to speak to an interpreter and said that he was one of the workers.
Excuse me.
One of the local workers who was on the grass cutting detail that we had been watching for, or keeping an eye on. And, it turns out, I guess, that he wasn't, but I call Anaconda Maine to ask them about that, and they told me, basically, that's not our responsibility, and I told them I did not know that, and could they tell me who it was, whose responsibility it was, and they didn't return my radio message. But, so I tried calling my commander of the relief, my COR, and ask him, and couldn't get a hold of him. And then, so I called the NCOIC, and couldn't get a hold of him for a while, and then finally one of the other towers relayed to him for me because we were having commo issues all that night. My guess is that one of the convoys that came in, maybe two or three of the convoys that came in, I don't know, some of the vehicles in there probably didn't turn off their warlock systems. Now, warlock, I'll give you just the basics, and I know I can tell you what I'm going to tell you because I don't have a security clearance anymore. Because I got out for too long and they didn't bother renewing it because, you know, I was out. And so I didn't bother getting another one because, frankly, I don't need it in this job and it's just a kind of a pain in the ass investigation of you. But I was given this briefing, and since I figured since I didn't get a security clearance and they were able to tell me this, I can tell you at least this much without you having a security clearance. But the warlock system is basically just a jamming device because the guerrillas here that are putting the IEDs in place, a lot of them trigger them with cordless phones. What they do is they take the cordless phone itself and attach it to the detonator in such a way that the speaker, the ringer speaker on the... Wow, man, that AC really kicks out hard. But the ringer speaker on the AC is attached to the detonator, so when the phone rings, it detonates. Well, because the phone is, you know, separated from its base, they can take the base and have it a distance away with power, you know, run to that, and all they have to do is just hit the paging button on it. And so, you know, it sends up a little beeper signal so you can locate your missing cordless phone, and that detonates the weapon.
So what they do is, with the Warlock system, it's basically just a jammer that interferes with various radio frequencies so that those types of detonators don't work in the immediate vicinity of them. And near as I can tell, because of the weird scrambled pitch and cutting in and out that some of the other towers' radio transmissions were having, or were doing when I heard them on my own radio, that it sounded like some kind of jamming was going on between us and the Anaconda main or the retrans towers or something like that. So, one of the other towers figured it out too when we weren't in comms with them, and they called up Anaconda Main and suggested to them that they let the entry control point guys, the ECP, know to reiterate to the convoys to turn off their warlocks, because they're supposed to, and they tell them when they come in, but they want to make sure, they should make sure to tell them, hey, definitely make sure your damn warlocks are off. So those were the interesting parts of the night, that period. And the rest of it, the uninteresting parts, were the remaining, say, 20 hours of the night, or of that guard shift. Oh boy, I don't really know where else to go with this, Don't have anything prepared, and I am very, very tired from getting ready for this inspection. I'm supposed to mention some stuff. I should, I guess, as part of the regular course of the show, I would normally be putting on. I would normally mention that I'm very grateful to Lenore and, I don't have my notes. It's either Christine or Christina, sorry, that donated a couple bucks here, a couple bucks there. Every bit is appreciated. I think there's been another donation, but I don't think I got the name yet as of the time I'm recording this. I'm now getting around 300 downloads of the podcast daily through podcatchers or direct downloads. So, thank you very much, folks. You're not alone out there, individual listener. There's about 2¾ of an infantry company. You guys are, you're almost battalion strength, actually. If I get the 150 more of you, we'll be at battalion strength. And that's a pretty sizable force if we decided to do something. I'm not saying that we should. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to inspire any kind of mass revolutionary movement or anything. I'm just trying to let people know what I think is going on and what I see from over here. Had a few things also that I wanted to talk about. I have seen a few things in Stars and Stripes that were kind of upsetting to me. Like the fact that there's been a number of fairly high-level officers in the Army Medical Corps, especially in the psychiatric branch, that have admitted that, yes, the Army has been sending guys back into combat with PTSD, even though the military will not take you to initially enter the military if you have PTSD from any other cause. So that was kind of disheartening to see, and then to see that PTSD referrals were being... I guess they were kind of shortchanging them or minimizing the amount to try to reduce the numbers that are being reported or something like that of cases happening. And I saw that there was also the whole deal with the autistic 18-year-old back home in Portland, Oregon, who had been recruited into the Army despite his mother's protests and her showing the recruiters the paperwork that he was being treated for autism, or not treated, but he was in a program to help him deal with it, I should say, is probably the best way of putting it. And so there's an investigation onto that as to whether the recruiters knew he was autistic when they got him into the Army. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Just seems like shit's just falling apart. A little here and a little there. There was another thing I was going to talk about. PTSD related, what was that? Oh, jeez, I wish I had that copy of Stars and Stripes with me still. Actually, I'll just check my bag since I have it over here. In case you hadn't already noticed, this is a wide departure from my normal show style and tone. But, like I said, that's just because I'm very tired. Damn beetles everywhere. I haven't had a chance to do much research. And frankly, I felt kind of guilty for leaving y'all hanging with the show being late like this. I figured I should just throw something up. It's better than nothing. I don't know, plenty of y'all are interested enough in it that you'll listen to what I have to say just to see what's going on. And yes, I do have those issues of Stars and Stripes here. Just have to sort through them. Some headlines. Gitmo detainees clash with guards. At least 105 killed in Afghan violence. Bombing kills at least 14 Iraqis near Camp Victory. Report. Troops with mental problems forced into combat. Autistic 18-year-old's recruitment sparks army investigation. Oh, geez, where was that other one? There was some good stuff. Cabinet sworn enemy attacks in Iraq. Oh, I had an article about Iraqi forces attacking each other, too, I was going to talk about, but I don't know where that article went. Ah, here we go. Marine Lance Corporal James Blake Miller. I know plenty of you have seen that picture. A photographer after a battle in Fallujah back in 04 took a picture of a Marine with his face smeared with his camo paint and a little bit of blood on him. And he's just basically kind of staring off into the middle distance and has his cigarette hanging from his mouth. They nicknamed him Marlboro Man, which apparently he really just hates. And he has been diagnosed and discharged with very, very severe PTSD. I've had a link on my site for several months now to this guy's story. And it's really sad. And I don't know what else to say about it, you know. But it's sad, and it's happening all too often. And according to the article, 3 years after leaving the Kentucky Hills for a career in the Corps, he was back home. He feels adrift and tormented, dependent on his new bride, his family, and his military psychiatrist to help him make sense of all that has befallen him. He's lucky in a way. His wife, they have known each other since grade school. She understands him quite a bit, but she said that he's not the same as before. I had never seen the anger, the irritability, the anxiety. Blake says he feels guilty about taking money, $2,528 in monthly military disability checks, for doing nothing. And he's also frustrated that two careers made possible by his military training, police officer or U.S. Marshal, are out of reach because law enforcement is reluctant to hire candidates with PTSD. So he broods, feeling restless and out of options. Quote, I'm only 21, I'm able-bodied as hell, yet I'm considered a liability. It's like I had all these doorways open to me, and suddenly they all closed on me. It's like my life is over, end quote. He's lucky in that his wife is graduating this spring from Pikeville College in Kentucky with a psychology degree. And she's apparently been helping him with visualization techniques and meditation to help him confront his demons and help some of his anger management problems. So he is very fortunate that he has someone like that in his life who knows a little bit about how to deal with that kind of problem. But there are so many out there who are not that lucky, that are going to end up on the streets, are going to end up homeless and jobless, especially in the economic climate our country's in today. You know, they say the economy is doing great, but they don't say for who. They don't point out that even with their job gains that they keep pointing, that they keep crowing and trumpeting, those are still net job losses because they're not creating as many jobs every month as we are enough of a level to keep up with the number of people who are entering the job market every month, either by getting old enough to work or by immigrating into the U.S. So it's just going to be an impossible situation for guys who are having trouble with dealing with everyday life to even be able to try to find, you know, work. You know, his wife goes on to say that it's understandable that Blake has PTSD after all he's been through. Ordinary people can't comprehend what it's like to be constantly shot at and have to kill other human beings. They need to know what it means to send people like Blake out to fight wars. You're going to have a lot of people breaking. 5 other members of his platoon of about 3 dozen have been diagnosed with PTSD. So you have 6 out of 36. Yeah, 1 in 6 guys with PTSD in that unit. 12 men from his unit were killed in action. Journal of the American Medical Association study published in March found that more than a third of troops who served in Iraq sought help for mental health problems within a year of returning home. It's crazy. Crazy. I don't know what else to say about his case. It's just sad. The young men like that, their whole lives ahead of them, are shattered. Troops clashing. I don't have the article in front of me, but I remember the gist of it was that Kurdish troops had gotten into an engagement, and they weren't in their usual Kurdish-held areas. They were down pretty close to here in Balad, apparently. Or here, near Balad, I should say. We're not actually in Balad. But these Kurdish troops had been in an engagement, and they had some wounded. So they go to the hospital. Now, the Kurds being crazy fuckers that they apparently are, instead of yelling at people to get out of the way as they're trying to bring their wounded buddies through a crowd to the hospital, and instead of just firing a few shots into the air, in order to clear the way, they just fired into the crowd. And so naturally they were refused access to the hospital, and other security forces came to the area to find out what the hell they were doing, and so the Kurds with their wounded fought their way out of the security forces and engaged pretty much in a running gun battle throughout the next couple hours to get their guys to a hospital. And a lot of people don't realize that the Kurds doing that, just firing into a crowd down here in Balad, is not really all that surprising if you've ever worked with the Kurds. I was on gate guard last time we were here up north in Mosul, out on the south gate for an 8-hour shift every day for, I think it was 20 days. And during an 8-hour shift, the whole shift, I was dealing with two Kurdish soldiers. And these guys hate Arabs. They absolutely hate Arabs. So, they don't really care if they end up killing some Arabs because they're trying to get their guy into the hospital. You know, it's not a lot surprising, really, but, you know, I don't know how well reported that was back home, but I think it was kind of a big issue when you have trying to form a coalition of these various, the three different ethnic or religious groups. I would say ethnic, but you have Shia Arab versus Sunni Arab, so that's the ethnicity is the same, but they're clashing because of the religious sect. But then you have, you know, Sunni Kurds and Shia Kurds, who don't really, they might clash, but they don't really, they look at themselves as Kurds first, and will hate, and they hate and will fight Arabs, whether the Arabs are Sunni or Shia. It's just the strangest damn thing. But when you're trying to form a unified military force, and one portion of that force doesn't really care whether it fights other members of that force or not, that's a potential problem. We'll be right back. see what else we got in the paper here. I mean, hell, Representative Duncan Hunter. This is from the 21st. I've been seeing little bits and pieces about this Marines killing civilians in other papers from earlier, but this is the first time I've seen it as more than just a one or two column inch thing. Yeah, forthcoming military investigations into alleged war crimes in Iraq will show that a squad of U.S. Marines killed about 24 Iraqi civilians, including women and children, while on a patrol in Haditha in November, a higher number than first believed, and then gave inaccurate reports on the incident to their commanders, a congressional Republican said Friday. House Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Duncan Hunter, Republican from California, said his panel will hold oversight hearings on the two investigations to ensure they are undertaken by the military with integrity. That's good that he's doing that. It's really good if he follows through with a full investigation. Representative John Murtha, Democrat from Pennsylvania, said the incident, quote, was much worse and had involved no firefight or roadside bomb that killed civilians. Quote, our troops overreacted because of the pressure on them and they killed innocent civilians in cold blood, said Murtha, who seeks a rapid withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Now, first of all, I want people to understand that from everything I have seen and heard and read and looked into, investigated, touched, felt, smelled, all that, anyway, in every way possible that I could learn about it, or learn about anything that happens around here, this is an isolated incident. It is sad, it is shameful, it is disgusting. But fortunately, it is isolated, and unfortunately, it has the potential to not be isolated incidents. There is a lot of bad vibes, so to speak, brewing over here among the troops. And I worry about what kind of shitstorm could boil over here in these kind of conditions. And I want to say to all of the other Marines out there, I know that it was just a case of wrong guys in the wrong place going through the wrong shit. But to those guys, those Marines who were involved in it, I want to ask you if you know the words to your own damn services hymn. What the hell were you doing killing civilians? The fuck is wrong with you? It is bullshit. They are non-combatants. You're disgusting. You fucking sicken me. You know, what are the words to your fucking hymn? Huh? First to fight for right and freedom and to keep our honor clean. Oh, God damn it. You know, words fucking fail me in something like this. It's just bullshit. It's one more thing that builds enemies to our cause. Whatever fucking cause that is over here, I should say. It builds enemies. It recruits for insurgencies. It recruits for the guerrillas. It recruits for the terrorists. It recruits for the jihad tourists that come here to get their training against us, because now we're their opposition force to train against in their training center. Anybody who's ever been to National Training Center, NTC, in Fort Irwin, California for desert warfare knows about the OP4, the guys that are players as the opposition force. You go there, you test your skills against them, you learn how to fight better. Well, basically, we have turned this place into NTC for terrorists. They come here, they train against us, and they leave. They go back to their home countries, and now what civil police force is going to be able to stand against them, including in our own country, when they have trained against the United States Army, the United States Marine Corps, when they have trained to conduct operations against us using the simplest devised weapons they can, using just ingenuity and improvisation, and they manage to pretty much hold their own on a strategic level, not necessarily tactically in individual engagements. They're not really holding their own. But this bullshit, killing civilians. My God, what the... You know, this war is quickly becoming like another unpopular war in all the wrong fucking ways. And we don't need that. We already have enough fucking people hating us because of the stupidity that has been perpetrated at the highest levels in executing this operation. The lack of forethought, the lack of planning, the lack of consideration for the ideas of other nations, the lack of consideration for the legality of such an operation under international and U.S. law. And it's just, oh God, I don't want to get started on that. But basically, these types of actions eventually directly harm your fellow service members, your fellow Americans. Because what happens? These civilians, you kill civilians. Now their families are pissed because you killed their family. And rightly so. And you deserve whatever the fuck they can do to you. You really do. Regardless of what uniform you wear, if you kill civilians, you are a fucking scumbag. That's all I have to say about you. But your actions have consequences. You've just created people that, you know, if you've killed someone's family and they feel they have nothing to live for and they want to come after us, they're more likely to fight to the death. Not that they're not likely to fight to the death already because of fucking stupid motherfuckers in Abu Ghraib and Bagram and Gitmo torturing prisoners. Because of them, now these guys know I can't surrender. I have to fight to the death or I'll be tortured and humiliated, my religion mocked, and myself violated. So now they have no incentive whatsoever to surrender. They have every incentive in the world to fight to the death. Well, now you take a guy that already knows that already sees what was happening, and may still go on just a little bit quieter, but still playing their little games. And he sees all of that, and he thinks, man, I can't surrender. I can't surrender, or they'll fucking torture me. You know, they'll rape me. They'll do whatever, they'll violate me. Now this guy has no family. He's got nothing to live for. Well, now you've just made another potential martyr for the cause. Now you've just made another guy who's willing to strap a bomb on himself and walk into a fucking crowded place. You've made another guy who's willing to drive a freaking junked-ass white hatchback with orange quarter panels and a missing headlight, and he's willing to drive that right up to your checkpoint and detonate on you. All because some dumb motherfuckers forgot who the fuck they were. Forgot they were Americans. Forgot what that's supposed to mean. What that used to mean. People who have forgotten what their grandfathers fought for. In some cases, what their fathers fought for. My God. I'm going to let that one go at that. Stars and Stripes, I have to say, because they don't listen to people trying to work the refs, trying to accuse them of only reporting bad news. They report whatever news gets to them. I mean, they report the good, they report the bad, they report the extremely sad. In, oh my God, this one got me misty-eyed, I have to admit it. And I was almost actually openly weeping, but I was at least a little misty-eyed from this one, a little wet around the edges. They had printed a nice feel-good story that was actually really sweet, probably around the 16th or the 15th or so, about how certain units were going to get an internet feed so they could have like a teleconference thing, and members of the unit could watch some of their loved ones graduating from various schools, which I thought, that's really nice. You know, they can't be home for it. Well, hey, at least they can see it. And I thought, that's really nice. It's a wonderful thing. And I mean, I remember when I was in Afghanistan, I got to do teleconference with my wife and my son Jack when he was younger, and my wife was still pregnant with our youngest son. And it was just really nice to be able to see them and talk to them. And so I thought that was a great thing. And now, from the May 19th issue. John Engelman had a goal for his wife. On Saturday, Donna Engelman achieved it, or maybe Engelman anyway. Donna Engelman achieved it when she retired. Oh, Jesus. My mouth is going weird. On Saturday, Donna Engelman achieved it when she received a bachelor's degree in political science and public administration. John Engelman, I'm going to say Engelman from now on. I'm not going to switch back and forth. I'm sorry. A career military man who grew up on Long Island and was stationed in southern Iraq, watched with pride as his wife received her diploma, thanks to an internet feed set up by Concord University in West Virginia. He was so excited for me, Donna Engelman said. For him to be able to see me graduate was really special. He told me afterward that I looked great, she said, her voice cracking. Then he said, I'll call you tomorrow for Mother's Day. That call never came. John Engelman, 45, an Army Chief Warrant Officer, was killed Sunday when his Humvee hit a roadside bomb, exploded, and flipped over, his family said Tuesday. Engelman, who had served in Desert Storm in Kosovo, was sent to Iraq in February as part of an embedded special transition team to train and advise Iraqi security forces for 1 year. The headline, GI dies day after wife graduates. How much more of that? How many more times are we going to hear about GI dies before his 20th birthday, day before his birthday, or, you know, GI dies day after his son is born? I don't know.
I wrote a letter to your baby asking, won't you please come home? 'Cause when you're gone, I'm all alone. I worry all day long. Baby, won't you please come home?
But I am happy to say that I found this, and I am so stoked about this, and I want people to, I want every state to do this. And if you want to do anything to support us over here, you will go and encourage your state to do this. Virginia Housing Development Authority has announced a new program to assist Virginia servicemen and women injured during combat, Operation Granting Freedom. The program makes grants up to $4,000 available to wounded veterans who need some type of housing modification due to their injuries. The grants are available to pay for modification work on Virginia homes or apartments to make them accessible. Grants are available immediately for accessibility, such improvements as widened doorways, lower counters, and wheelchair ramps and visual smoke detectors. A recommendation for the housing modification is required from a VA hospital rehabilitation officer, VA attending physician, or a VA physical therapist. There have been just a handful of applications since the program started, said spokesman Brian Matt, quote, but we're looking to make more. Once approved, veterans will have 120 days to have the modification work completed and inspected. For more information about Granting Freedom, and I urge you all to do this, to find out how their program works and try to implement it in your own states, call VHDA at 877-843-2123. Email julia.perkinson, common spelling, at vhda.com, or visit www.vhda.com/freedom. It's just, oh man, you know, damn neighbors. It is so nice to hear something like that going on. It really is. And I would urge all of you that are listening to this to go out and do something like that in your own state. Get somebody to, you know, get a program started like that to help these guys. Something that makes a real difference in the lives of guys who have given so much. You know, this might be kind of, I don't know, I think this is probably a boring episode here, but I think it's, I don't know, it feels kind of relaxing sitting here just reading the paper to y'all, I guess. I don't really see a lot else in here that's, really all that compelling. you know, people say that journalists, you know, the liberal journalists aren't reporting the good news from here. I'll tell you, the Stars and Stripes is, I don't know if they're liberal media as such, but I looked through here, and they would be the ones that would know, and they would be the ones that would report positive stuff if positive stuff were being allowed to be reported. And that's one of the big things, too, you know, that people claiming liberal media is not reporting the good stuff. Well, a lot of times the military does not allow them to. And that is because of the simple fact that if you report in a internet, you know, on an international news media forum of some sort, that, say, we just finished reconstruction of a school in Haditha. Well, now that school is a target. If you say that we have done a great public works project bringing water to parts of Ramadi, now the waterworks are going to get bombed. There are already teachers being killed here. Guys that are, you know, four teachers in a car that was followed and they were pulled over and killed. And everybody in the town knew they were teachers. And they, a lot of the locals there are saying that it's because the people were suspecting that these guys worked at a school that the Americans had rebuilt. So, you have that to worry about. So the military does not allow the media to report a lot of the feel-good stories. And there are some going on. But I think that all of that, all of the good stories, all the good stuff we do here, you can report, try to report that all you want, but it's outweighed by one simple fact. The simple fact that the latest budget has no money for reconstruction for Iraq. None at all. All the money that is going to Iraq is going for security for existing projects. And unfortunately, we haven't even got electricity back to all the people who had electricity before the war. We haven't got clean running water back to all the people who had it before the war. We haven't gotten telephone service back to all the people who had it before the war. We have not gotten anything except maybe troop levels of Iraqi forces back to where they were before the war. And that's not trained. It's not trained. General Casey himself said that there was only one battalion at the end of last summer that was ready to stand on their own. When the summer before, he said, there had been three. You know, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I look for good news coming out of here. I see good news in the Stars and Stripes. Weekend event takes aim at inactive youth. It's in Washington. VA to help vets retrofit homes. It's in Virginia. And I see lawyers say slaying of GI was in self-defense. This guy comes home from over here dealing with all this shit. Finds another guy in his house wearing just socks and underwear. Gets pissed off. Overreacts. Most likely because he's been in a situation here where you can't really overreact when there's something that pisses you off. A lot of times when you're out here, something pisses you off, there's only one way to react. Well, he overreacts, gets stabbed in the neck, and dies. Some other good news I see in here. Villagers return to home near erupting volcano, but that's in Indonesia. Alan Singh is, he pleads guilty in sex abuse case. Son of Oklahoma bombing conspirator jailed. Company defends action on eye infections. Prosecutors display car used in sniper shootings. Lionel Tate gets 30 years for violating probation. Enron chief starts second trial. Woman stabbed outside school. Teacher admits taking kids' bribes. God. Ecuadorian volcano releases gas. Turks condemn attacks on judge.
It's, my God, what the hell is wrong with people?
Cripes. I don't know, I think I'm going to call it quits for this portion of this episode. Maybe I'll put some more on here that will remain to be seen. Wow, loud neighbors.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like what you heard and you feel like supporting this program, go ahead and go on over to my website, godfulskinzer.com, K-I-N-S-E-R, and on the right sidebar there, you'll see an Amazon Honor System pay box. Go ahead and click on there and make a donation. I appreciate all the feedback and support I've been getting from all of y'all. Until next time, take care of yourselves.